This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV.
Local productions seen on Delta College Public Media are made possible with support from viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Junior Doan's The Spark. I'm Junior Doan. Thank you for joining me today. My guest is chaplain and international volunteer, Carol Bogan. Welcome, Carol. What does it mean to be a chaplain? What does a chaplain do?
So a chaplain is basically clergy outside of a church. So if you went to, you know, a church, a cathedral, you know, anything, you would expect to find pastors, priests, those sort of folks. Chaplains are more in the workforce, in the military, in the hospital, places like that, with first responders.
And what drew you to this field?
So it wasn't anything I was really planning on. So when I retired from my career with Roman Haas and then Dow, I had been praying about this, and be careful what you pray for because God answers. And you've heard the old expression, if someone tells you you're a horse, ignore them. If two people tell you, look in the mirror. If three people tell you, buy a saddle. And having done 30 years of youth ministry and other things like that, the path was open and a lot of doors were open, and it's worked out really well. It's been a joy to serve in this way.
What made you choose youth ministry?
Oh my goodness. So when our son was very small, my husband thought we should volunteer with the youth group so we would know which babysitters were safe and which were the wild kids. And I thought this was a terrible idea because I wasn't that crazy about teenagers when I was one. And, you know, I was kind of brought into this kicking and screaming, and it's just been the greatest joy of my life. And now we're 30 years in. And what a blessing, what a joy. And now I get to serve teenage foster kids, which is also a great honor and a joy.
You actually do a lot of things in that field of being a chaplain. Would you care to tell us some about that?
One of the things I do is I'm on a critical incident stress management team, which basically helps first responders debrief after they've had traumatic encounters. This was developed after the Oklahoma City bombing, and it's been around that long. And I guess there's about a dozen of us on the team here. I've been asked to do, up to over 10 weddings now, which is always a wonderful surprise, but a great joy. Funerals, of course. I've come alongside, being a cancer survivor myself, a lot of cancer patients. And because we went through the flood twice, with 2017 and 2020, United Way and places like that have sent me to come alongside people who also went through the flood, who need to process with a chaplain.
And before you moved here, you were at Roman Haas. Could you tell us about how you got there, what you did?
Why, sure. So when my husband Leonard graduated from the University of Illinois, he was hired by Roman Haas. We had a young son at the time who was just, you know, 3 years old. So the idea was I would stay home with him until he was old enough to at least get into school, and then I would work part-time and so forth. And the little fellow at the age of 4 figured out that all the other children in the neighborhood got onto this yellow school bus. And they played with 30 kids all day, and there were field trips. And Mom, how do I get to be part of this? And I said, well, sweetheart, you know, that's really nice, but we have our thing, and we do the park and the library, and I cut the coupons and you cut everything else. And he said, Mom, there is no yellow bus. There are no 30 other kids. And of course, at that time in the Philadelphia area, house prices had gone up 20% a year for 2 years in a row. So we're thinking, my goodness, we may never get a house, not knowing, you know, if that would ever end. And, you know, clearly it was worth trying with the job. And Leonard came home one day, we only had one car, and said, there's an opening in the nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy lab, which is, you know, an MRI for chemicals. And he said, you should do that. And I said, I'm an animal science major. You think? And he's like, no, 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 you'll catch on. So I went, and it was a wonderful interview. And, you know, I asked normal questions, right? You know, what are the priorities of the job? What would I learn first? You need me out of hours. Then we went to the lab. Absolutely no credit cards, no pacemakers, nothing containing iron anywhere in the lab. And of course, it's a superconducting electromagnet, right? So if anything with iron was in there, it could be drawn to the magnet. All of the liquid nitrogen, liquid helium would boil out and suffocate everybody in the room. You know, very, very careful sort of thing. And they said, and you will use a plastic vacuum cleaner and empty the plastic trash cans. And I said, I don't even need training for that. What I didn't know is they're required to have at least two candidates for the job. So what I was told later is when the real candidate came in who had a bachelor's in chemistry, seriously, who are you going to hire, right? And I was apparently, you know, the one we have to interview also, just to say we interviewed more than one person. And they were very quiet in the conference room, I was told. When they got into the lab, and again, this is, you know, all what I was told. They were explaining about the dangers of superconducting electromagnets. And they said, but it would be so cool to take a folding chair and see it fly across the room. Well, yes, but everyone would die and there'd be $500,000 worth of damage to the instrument. Oh, right. Well, maybe I could just wear earrings and feel the pull on my ears. And of course, you know, the scientist in charge said, well, you know, we probably would not die from that. So the conversation did not go as they expected afterwards, right? Animal science major, bachelor in chemistry. We don't want to die. Carol Bogan gets a job. So that was the start of my career. And our son absolutely loved going to school, had a ball, never once, you know, begged me not to go. So it was wonderful. I got to work in the analytical division, synthesis, applications testing. It was terrific. And again, the teenagers got into it too, because the Boy Scouts had a program where boys and girls of high school age could come in and learn about science in an on-the-job kind of setting. And so I got to be part of the Explorer Scout program as well.
What happened when Dow bought Roman Haas and your husband was offered a job at Dow?
That was very scary. No one knew that the acquisition was taking place. And I came down the hall to my office that particular day, and Dow was one of our biggest competitors, right? And someone said, you work for Dow Chemical, which would be, you know, like calling someone a traitor, right? And I said, I don't. I work for Roman Haas. Like, turn on your computer. Good grief. And because of the way the acquisition went and some surprises along the way, a lot of the research division lost their jobs and we still had ours. So, you know, by the grace of God, we were very happy to still be employed. Leonard was offered a job here. My job was still back in the Philadelphia area. So I went back and forth for, gosh, 3 years, half-time both places, until I was given a package, which was very convenient because I had leukemia at the time and I got to finish doing that and have a bone marrow transplant. But we love Midland. We are trying desperately to get all of our Philadelphia area friends to move here. So far, one chemical engineer and her family. So we have about 100 to go, but we've made progress. And thankfully, they moved here on the side of town that did not flood because I would have felt responsible.
Did you ever work for Dow?
Yes. So, I mean, as of that day, right, it's all of a sudden, you know, we're not wearing, you know, the burnt orange color anymore. It's all red and white, right? So, you know, basically I'm representing for Dow even now. But yeah, we all became Dow employees that fast.
Going back to being a chaplain, how did you decide what age group was most productive or satisfying and effective to work with?
That is such a hard question. Not that I don't love teenagers, because I do. But, you know, I love young adults starting their careers and their families. I love people you know, in the neighborhood of my age, you know, later career in retirement. And I just adore old people. So, you know, I like everybody.
You work with, I remember you're telling me that you were going to go to, I think, a week-long camp for children who had problems.
Oh, well,
you could be more detailed. And you were going to tell me, and you did tell me, your opening speech. Would you care to share?
My opening speech. Well, so I serve at, oh, look, I've got the mug, Royal Family Kids Camp, which is for children who are between 7 and 12 in the foster care system. And for that camp, I wrangle the teenage volunteers. And God bless these kids. I mean, they're doing this for free. You can pay kids to do what we have them do. And they clean the toilets and the showers, and they help watch the waterfront, and they carry bags of trash that weigh more than they do, and set all the tables and wash all the dishes for 150 people at a time, three times a day for a week. And it's exhausting, and it's wonderful. And I'm, you know, basically the chaplain for that group. And then for the Teen Reach Adventure Camp, which is the 13 to 18 year olds, for whatever reason, they've had me be the speaker there these last 5 years. I keep saying, you know, if somebody else would like to do this, they're like, no, they seem to listen to you. So that's a joy. But yeah, 5 years of that. It's a little shorter camp. And of course, the boys and the girls are separated at that age.
What did you learn from doing it?
The relentless love of God. How none of us are out of his sight and out of his care. And he will send his people around to support. And I love these foster families who've taken these kids into their hearts and their homes. It's such a beautiful thing to watch and a beautiful thing, you know, it's like what God does with us, right? Draws us in and loves us.
And I read that you're trying to start, you and your husband are in the midst of starting a school in Africa that would deal with adolescents who've aged out or whatever you call it over there, foster home. Tell us about that.
So some dear friends of ours are missionaries over there, and they have personally adopted, gosh, 6 or 7 orphans. And now some of these are having children, right? So they have, you know, grandchildren even through this. But they are starting this school, and we're on the board for these kids that turn 18. And, you know, they're now out of the orphanage, out of, you know, whatever care they had. And they have no marketable skills. And they end up on the street with every terrible thing you can imagine. And the Nelsons are like, no, this is not going to happen. We're going to start the school. So the land is purchased. And we actually had the privilege of going there last year to see what's going on and talk about where the buildings are going to go. And they're, you know, getting the teachers selected. And it's very exciting.
When you talk about starting a school, what would be the curriculum?
I think it's going to start out as a kind of a certificate program with, you know, vocational stuff. But they actually want to make this, you know, kind of a junior college sort of thing by the time it's said and done.
And who would you get as teachers?
You know, local people that are able to do that are great. There's been some talk of having people come over for a semester or two to do some instructing. So they have some folks in mind. Would you be interested?
Yeah. I am teaching just differently.
You do
I
a
think
great
we're
job.
All teachers, actually, by what we say and what we do, one way or another.
That's true.
I saw that you have counseled a handful of marital, I don't know if it's before marriage or after marriage. What is that program about?
So a little bit after. So mainly through our church, but not entirely, my husband and I do premarital counseling. And we use a program called Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. So SYMBIS, S-Y-M-B-I-S, is the acronym. And it's great because they have different tracks for people who have been married before and have not been married before. And apparently the people that developed it bought the rights to the DISC personality test. And they're the ones that wrote the eHarmony program. So they look at all these different life and your history. And it's so well done. And the printouts, you know, you have the picture of each of the people and their responses and these beautiful graphics showing, you know, where you, you know, kind of agree on things and where, you know, things might be complimentary and where you really need to have some conversations before you're really upset with each other. I wish with all my heart we had done something like that before we got married. We're 42 years in. Whew, that would have saved us probably a year or two of, you know how it is. Yeah.
adjustment.
Yes, I like that word.
Well, we're all adjusting anyway. If we're alive, we should be. Do you use Myers-Briggs as part of that or not?
So they incorporated the DISC, the DISC personality test. I've done Myers-Briggs through Roman Haas and Dow, but that would be separate from this one. I'd be interested to know your Myers-Briggs profile.
I bet. We can discuss that separately. The is it adaptable to single people who are starting out and thinking about a long-term relationship who maybe have not met that person to have it with?
That's a great idea. It's not set up for that because I send a link to the couple and they each fill it out. And then, you know, it shows where they are on, 16 pages worth of different areas. But that's a great idea. You know what? If you like, I will send that in to the people who produce this and make that suggestion. I think that's brilliant.
Thank you. But my thinking was, if people are drawn to mistakes through ignorance, let's say, or disinclination, this would give them a chance to just meditate, review, see how they're seen by the test, somebody else, then, you know, they could do whatever they wanted with it. Just one more piece of information about yourself. When I was working on a festival that was getting a lot of pushback, I would have these meetings, at very early morning meeting, 6:45 in the morning, and to plan and strategize this, that, and the other. And one of our wonderful committees said to me, "Junior, you go so fast. We're trying to keep up with you." And I realized at the time, she was right. You know, people get information differently, slow, fast, concrete examples, and that I had to moderate to make it more easily understood and available, you might say. So I think it's good when you have a suggestion, you get sort of a teacher from a friend. So I'm, you know, that's a non-professional way of saying things, but I think it would be useful. All kinds of teenagers date, you know, and they're always having things. And then we have, you know, looking around in the 20s. So anyway, it'd be interesting. Let me know if anything comes of it, because it might be something the church people could offer through their teenage programs.
You know, I like that idea. With the foster kids, we do a lot of testing on, you know, what would you be good at and what would you like to do for a living? And we have special events around that. But I like where you're going with this, and I would like something like that, because so often people see things in us that we don't see ourselves, and maybe it would be good if somebody told us. And of course, anytime you have something you need to tell me, I want to hear it, right? But it reminds me of the old Irish poem, "Oh, what a gift, the gifting ye is to see ourselves as others see us." So what a gift God would give us if we could see ourselves the way others look at us.
And that may be quite different person to person. I mean, the person looking at you. Yes, no.
There's a lot of people, and you're certainly one, that I would give permission to speak into my life. And if I seem to need a little direction or redirection, or if, you know, if I'm coming off a little tone deaf in certain areas, I would want to know that. And not everybody's willing to receive that sort of feedback.
I interviewed long years ago now a pastor who was talking about the different ways of loving. Apparently there's now a book about that, and that you need to know your own, how you experience love could be quite different from anybody else's. And in a long-term relationship, you don't need to, but it's better if you know your spouses so they can receive the love you really feel in terms they can understand and internalize. So it's always, but then I say to myself, you know, it's so funny. I say, well, that's the American culture. Would that be true in the British culture or some other cultures? So I'm mindful that it's not necessarily everywhere and every time. And if we do it in 20 years or 30 years from now, or 20 years, 30 years in the past, it might have been different.
You know, culture does have a big impact, but we always tell the couples that we come alongside, and we've, you know, people 20 and people over 70. I mean, we've covered the spectrum, but we always say, be a student of your spouse.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
So really know them, pay attention. What do they like? What do they not like? You know, what makes them really happy? What really gets on their nerves? And, you know, work with that. So don't just, you know, take it for granted and be all about you, but just, you know, what will make their day special? What will make life easier for them?
If it's not too personal a question, don't feel you have to answer it. What have you learned about Len, your husband, and how he best receives your ongoing affection?
So we've been married 42 years, and this month we've known each other 49. He proposed to me a month after we met, when we were both 14. Isn't that crazy? So we think of ourselves as late 20s, right? We just kind of got stuck there. So, you know, he's a simple fellow in a lot of ways. He wants everything to be very direct, very simple. He's a brilliant man of science, and a very godly fellow. So just honesty, grace. There's a really good book, I believe Gary Smalley wrote it, called The Five Love Languages. And physical affection and words of affirmation, gifts of service, and gifts of time. So if you know how your spouse rolls in that area, that's a very helpful thing. Leonard is very much an affection, words of affirmation kind of guy, and quality time.
What would you say about yourself? What is the best way for him to show, for you to experience his love?
That's terrible. I've never thought about that. You know, I'm pretty much any of the five on any given day. So
I love it. You want it all.
You know, I love a hug and, you know, to be listened to and, you know, tell me I'm wonderful and, you know, make me dinner and buy me a present. Yeah, just, you know.
I understand that well. I do. I like it when people do things for me. They don't have to, and it takes time and thought and energy. But it's, I always think kindness and patience sometimes, because not every day are we at our best. Who was it? It was Ruth Bader Ginsburg's mother who gave her, I don't know if it was the day she was married or the day before or the day after, but she said to her daughter, later became a judge and well-known, she said, sometimes you should be a little hard of hearing when your husband says something. Maybe, which I took it to be, if he annoys you or says something or barks, just let it go.
Yes.
So that was her advice. And sometimes it's good to just absorb it. We're not in the best mood all the time. So you've made yourself quite at home in Midland.
We absolutely love Midland. So we live in the Igloo house. And we were praying. We said, Lord, what house could you use for your purposes? And we ended up here. Gosh, we love it. Okay, two floods later, you know, there's a downside there. But it's been so delightful. As soon as we signed the mortgage papers, Zonta was here wanting to do the walkthrough here. We've had the Rotary International students stay over. The Open Door Homeless Shelter has had Christmas parties here. Schools have done fundraisers here. People with cancer have done fundraisers here. We just did a dinner Tuesday night. We were for adoption option. We were one of the silent auction items. So they had baked Alaska with flambé and the whole thing. And it's so much fun.
I know you've had cancer or have cancer.
Oh,
and you've had some pretty serious treatment. And I know you're contemplating writing a book, which you already started. How do you handle ongoing situations like that that don't get cured immediately?
So thankfully, I am fully cured. I'm almost 8 years out from a bone marrow transplant that cured my leukemia. But, you know, sometimes God's gifts aren't what you expect. And this has given me such a door of opportunity to minister to other people with cancer. So my book is Cancer Camp, Thriving in the Wilderness of Cancer. And it's kind of a how-to get you started, helping people come to grips with the cancer path. And it's a whole lot of resources to help you get through it. And even throughout the book, there's QR codes for financial resources, counseling resources, community resources. And it's a very winsome thing. It's in the motif of a camp. And there is, of course, a camp director who is a naked mole rat. And you're thinking, well, what in the world? So here is Ned, a naked mole rat. And they are, man, I'm doing this the wrong direction. But the idea with the naked mole rat is that's the only mammal on Earth never found to have cancer in the wild ever, and it's being studied. And his name is Ned because every cancer patient wants to see the letters NED on your paperwork, which means no evidence of disease, which means you're cured.
I didn't know that.
Go home from camp, which is, of course, every cancer camper's dream.
Thank you so very much, Carol. I think I was thinking, what is your philosophy of life? And the thing that came to me was make it better. Wherever you are, make it better. Make the situation better, the person improved, the environment. And it must give you great energy and great satisfaction. And I hope that's true. So to everyone tuning in, remember what I tell you every single time. Go out and do something kind for someone you know and someone you don't know. And do it every day going forward. They were so grateful whether they tell you or not. See you next time. Bye, bye, bye.
To contact Junia, send her an email at juniadonesthespark@gmail.com. For more information, program schedules, and news about future guests, go to www.juniadonesthespark.com. Thank you for joining us. See you next time on Junia Doan's The Spark.
Local productions seen on Delta College Public Media are made possible with support from viewers like you. Thank you.
This program is presented by a community producer through Midland Community Television. The City of Midland and MCTV are not responsible for the content of the program. The views presented do not necessarily represent those of the City of Midland or MCTV. If you would like to produce your own program, contact MCTV at 837-3474 or access our website, cityofmidlandmi.gov/MCTV. We hope you enjoy the following presentation.